these missing years, because that is a major thrust of your work.
In fact, the missing years of Jesus, this is, I think he was born as a being who had his own profound and deep wisdom, and he was, I believe, the incarnation of that third level that the mystery schools believed in, which was the solar sun, or the S-U-N, or the S-O-N, the Son of God.
At what point did he realize who he was? When he was a child, or much later in life?
Well, you know, I think that he was probably told. There was a lot of mythos, as you remember, about, you know, the great Lion of Judah and the coming of this Messiah and so forth. But I think that he went inward with this information rather than going outward. And there were, as you may know, many, let's say, zealots at that time who claimed to be various levels of the Messiah. And it was more about freeing the Hebrew community from the tyranny of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and also the military might of Rome. But Jesus's travels, which I talk about in the book at great depth, he studied with six different chapters of the Great White Brotherhood: the Essenes, the Druids, the Therapeutae in Egypt, the Mithran Persians, and Zoroastrian Persians.
And the Essenes are the ones that we claim put the Dead Sea Scrolls together, right?
Yeah, they had nine communities throughout what we would think of as Palestine or Israel. Actually, it was the southern kingdom was Judea, and the northern was Galilee, which had once been the home to a lot of Gentiles, mm-hmm. until the Maccabees kind of forced them to conform about 100 B.C. So we had a lot of things going on at that time. But if you think about it, Jesus was surrounded by the mystery schools everywhere. To the south was Egypt, where, you know, Abraham had gone, where Joseph of the coat of many colors had gone, where many other, let us say, Jewish tribal patriarchs had a deep level of association with the mysteries. Moses, of course, a master initiate who studied in the temples of Heliopolis the second.
Okay, but when you say he was told who he was, basically.
Well, who
told him?
Well, of course, the stories of the Annunciation, where the angel appears to Mary, and there's this whole prophecy, and Joseph, of course, Joseph the dad, mm-hmm. is having to deal with the fact that his 15-year-old young wife that he wasn't even sure he wanted to take, because he already had five children and was older. He was probably, I don't know, he could have been in his 50s. We don't know exactly how old, but we know.
Well, that's not too old. Come on now.
right. But if you were marrying a 15-year-old,
well,
that'd be a big deal.
That's a big deal.
That's a big age gap.
That's
there.
Jail time.
Yes, that's jailbait. So back to the mysteries, there are many different, one of the things, that the book's organized basically in six sections. The first section, two chapters where I talk about the mysteries and how they taught, and how they taught their mysteries on three levels, and how they taught through Hermetics. And then we begin the story.
Now, when you say they taught, who's they?
The sages, the adepts, the masters who were involved in transmitting this deeper esoteric knowledge to initiates.
All right. Okay. Now, was that pre or post Jesus?
The mystery schools had been in full bloom some 4,000 years before Jesus was born, and some 400 years after. And when I say he was surrounded, you had the Eleusinian mysteries in Greece, you had the Jewish, Christian mysteries Egyptian mysteries in Egypt. You had the Buddhists who had already come into Egypt, for example, and into England.
Were they all similar, their stories, their mysteries?
Somewhat, yes. For example, almost all of the chapters of the Great White Brotherhood, or the Melchizedek Order, as it's referred to in the Old Testament, have three levels of initiation. The first level was what they call the lesser mysteries, and they were about the divine feminine. And it's not because the female is lesser than the male, it's because they were foundational. If you didn't get that piece, you couldn't understand the rest. So they believed very much in the awe and wonder of the divine as it expressed through the intelligence of nature. So they taught astronomy. They taught botany and herbs and healing.
They were the scientists of the era.
They were the scientists of the era. They taught physics, and they taught metaphysics. And they taught both the mastery of the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. And they believed that by beginning to activate, let's say, your kundalini or your chi or life force energy and moving it up the spine in a very specific yoga or way of breathing, that you would encounter places within your emotional field, let's say, where you were blocked. And, of course, you'd have to do the work of doing house cleaning and getting rid of whatever that block was. But eventually, if you cleared enough of your own stuff, you could become a vessel for greater and greater levels of light or enlightenment. And eventually, you activated this place between your left and right hemispheres where the corpus callosum is. And when you did this, you balanced the male and the female, and you could activate your clairvoyance, your inner sight. And this, they believed, by developing these inner faculties, it was the beginning of one's ability to directly experience those invisible dimensions you were speaking about earlier.
All right. Now, this is where it really becomes a little investigative and fascinating at the same time. So these schools are around 4,000 years before, 400 years after.
Indeed.
This individual shows up on the scene. And that's just a fact. It's a given. He's here. At about what age does he just disappear?
Well, you know, in the Bible, the New Testament, Gospels, basically we get the story of the Nativity, the story where the magical hero is born. Then we know that they leave for Egypt. Then we don't hear anything else till they're back in Judea, and they have to come down from Galilee when he's about 12 for kind of the equivalent of the bar mitzvah.
Okay.
This is something that was demanded of all 12, 13-year-olds to sort of be sure that they were being taught in the Jewish scripture. The temple demanded it with the Pharisees and Sadducees. And then after that, nothing.
Was he being written about or observed up until 12? I mean, was he like the talk of the moment?
Well, at the time that the whole Star of Bethlehem happened, you know, in my book, I wound up getting access to some of the 560,000 documents hidden in the Vatican.
And how many?
Well, I can just tell you, in the late 1800s, there were 560,000 documents, and I'm sure there are a lot more than that now.
All right.
But I wound up getting access in the course of writing this book to some very phenomenal historical documents. And among them were Vatican, about 11 very important, precious, key Vatican documents from that time. One of them was a reporter that had been hired by the Sanhedrin Council after the whole Star of Bethlehem incident.
So they knew about that?
Yeah, okay. They did. To go and interview the high priest of Bethlehem, who was a guy called Melchor. And he had lived in Antioch, and his family had been very, you know, religious and so forth. And he was very, very excited because it sounded like he was more of a mystic, and he interpreted. They talk about what actually happened. This reporter actually interviewed the shepherds, too.
And about what time period are we talking about?
This is right at Jesus' birth. And
okay.
So they sent somebody out, like, you know, within a week or 2 weeks or a month, you know, very close to the time that it was all happening. And you know how in the New Testament we're just given like maybe a inch of writing about all this stuff?
Yeah.
I had two pages.
These were authentic writings? Or
yes.
This is fantastic.
It is fantastic. And what?
And so this reporter that the Sanhedrin sent was trying to find out who this little kid was?
Yeah, his name was Jonathan, and that's exactly why he was trying to find out what it was. And the priest said that the light came down over the whole city. It was huge, and it was moving and sparkling. And they thought the gods were coming down. They thought maybe Rome was on fire. They thought it was the end of the world. What?
This is amazing.
Yes, it's incredible. That's just one of about 11 phenomenal documents just from that source.
Does that make it, do you think we're talking about some kind of craft that was spotlighting the area?
I do. In fact, the shepherds say that what happened is an extraordinary passage, actually, and I include quite a bit of it in my book, but they say that there was this light that came down and was coming in waves around them, and that this music, incredible-sounding music, started playing. Now, they didn't actually see physical angels, the shepherds, but they heard these voices, like voices on high or something.
Well, and could these angels have been ETs?
It is quite possible.